The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard on corners in town, like a cancer that silently spreads. There's an unspoken fear, we're on our way down. We must take America back, Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C., before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back, as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, March 14th, 2023 edition of the National Intel Report. I am your host for this Tuesday, Michael Herzog, and as always, I will be with you for the next 2 hours. Now, the title of this evening's broadcast, and if I sound a little tired, folks, it's because I am. I've been through a lot the last couple weeks, so bear with me here. Title of this evening's broadcast, Exclamations, Expirations, and Expectations. Now, before I get started tonight, I'd like to take a moment to give a personal thank you to Tom D by sitting in for me last week. As many of you may know, unfortunately and unexpectedly, I was informed of the death of a family member, and I had to attend to the business of putting her to rest. Now, I may share that experience with you at some point in the future. However, for personal reasons, I don't think I'm going to do that tonight. So let's start with exclamations. Now, as many of you know, Tucker Carlson released a bombshell report recently showing what really happened on January 6th regarding Jacob Chansley, the guy that was also known as the Q Shaman, who now, unfortunately, sits in prison for alleged and exclamated crimes Tucker's report shows he didn't commit. The exclamations made on mainstream, lamestream media by many, including Mitch McConnell and Chuckie Schumer, manifest how outraged both parties were at Tucker's report, proving further that we really don't have a two-party system, folks, but instead we have a uniparty system. And also, an FBI whistleblower proclaimed under oath at the ongoing Proud Boys trial that the FBI withheld exculpatory evidence that would have exonerated the defendants had it been known. And this testimony was so explosive that the judge presiding over the case stopped the trial proceedings and postponed the prosecution. Now, I have with us tonight, I think, a repeat guest, one who was, by the way, SWAT teamed and tag teamed by the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, and subsequently arrested due to the event. And he is currently assisting with the Proud Boys case. And from what I understand, I just got a message from Julie, who is filling in for Mike, that he is, well, evidently not answering and is yet to be contacted or yet to answer his contact request. So I'm going to have Julie play for you an exclamation, and this is regarding the Tucker Carlson report that aired, I believe, last week, and his response to the 44,000 hours of videotape that was given to Tucker Carlson by Kevin McCarthy to review. And I guess, you know, the establishment Republican and Democrat both didn't like what they saw. So with that, Julie, go ahead and play clip number one. This is Mitch McConnell on his position regarding the Tucker Carlson report. Go ahead and play clip one, Julie.
My concern is how it was depicted, which is a different issue. Clearly, the chief of the Capitol Police, in my view, correctly describes what most of us witnessed firsthand on January 6th. So that's my reaction to it. It was a mistake, in my view, for Fox News to depict this in a way that's completely at variance with what our chief law enforcement official here at the Capitol thinks. You guys know I have many faults, but one of them is not answering the question in a way that I don't want to answer it. I've given
answering a question in the way that he doesn't want to answer it. In other words, being thrown a direct question that is going to cause him to, well, maybe stumble and go a bit off the narrative. But he's very concerned about the depiction of the way that Fox News aired this. And he agrees with the chief of the Capitol Police that it was a mistake for Fox and Tucker Carlson to come on and show any other point of view other than the narrative that both parties, i.e. folks, the Uniparty, is, well, shall I say, trying to shove down the throat of the populace. So it should come as no surprise that Mitch McConnell would come out with something like that. But I find it fascinating that he refers to Tucker's depiction. Well, what about the depiction of the J6 committee with Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger and Adam Schiff and all the usual suspects in there that scroll that basically went through, cherry picked, and nitpicked apart anything that was could, you know, exonerate these people? And on the other side of the coin, put everything out there that looked like, being heavily edited, that it could basically criminalize the people. So with that, I'm not through yet with the exclamations. While we're still trying to get Trennis up on the line here, let's go to Chuck Schumer's comments on the January 6th insurrection when he was questioned regarding his depiction of Tucker Carlson's report. Go ahead and play clip two, Julie. Okay. Julie, are you
tuned into one of the most shameful hours we have ever seen on cable television? With contempt for the facts, disregard of the risks, and knowing full well he was lying to his audience, Fox News host Tucker Carlson ran a lengthy segment last night arguing the January 6th Capitol attack was not a violent insurrection. By diving deep into the waters of conspiracy and cherry-picking from thousands of hours of security footage, Mr. Carlson told the bold-faced lie that the Capitol attack, which we all saw with our own eyes, was somehow not an attack at all. I, so many others who were here in the Capitol, and millions of Americans are just furious with Tucker Carlson and Kevin McCarthy. Millions.
Okay, you get the drift, folks. Chuckie Schumer putting out that it was the most shameful hours on that the American public witness on cable TV, and he has contempt for the false narrative that Tucker Carlson put out, lying as in his words to his audience about what Tucker said. Do you ever get the drift, folks? That these people are simply trying to double down to convince the normies, the populace at large, the people that don't pay attention, such as we do, that their narrative is the right narrative, and hoping that they don't look or they believe the nonsense that is being put out there. This is a sad day in America because the shaman, Jacob Tansley, is in prison for 41 months over what has been shown now to be a complete lie. And, you know, shifting gears a bit and talking about this whistleblower with the FBI that came out under oath in court and proclaimed that there was, 338 pieces of evidence that was she was told to withhold from this supposed trial that, as we've been seeing of late, you know, so many kangaroo courts that have gone on, was told to withhold the evidence, erase it, and not let it be seen. Is this a justice system in this country anymore? With that, let me take just a moment here and ask Julie. Julie, are we still trying to contact Trinus on Skype? Yes. Okay. So, from what I understand, he was in his he was in his garage, and I guess at some point we'll come on and kind of give us the details of what's going on, because Trinus is participating in and evidently assisting funding for the attorneys in the defense of the Proud Boys. And I've talked to Trinus, I've talked to him offline a couple of times, and he's very knowledgeable about not only the Proud Boys trial, but also all of these other trials that are going on, because he has dived full circle into what's happening ongoing with the January 6th prosecution. So with that, I understand Trinus is willing. Trinus, are you on? I got you.
Yes, sir, I am here.
Okay, yes, sir, listen, I was just... Pardon me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you okay. Yeah, no, I was just preempting this by basically giving the audience an overview. I had you on a few weeks ago, and
yes,
we were discussing the January 6th debacle and the trials that are going on. But you, a few, you know, dedicated patriots have jumped into this full circle, and you are giving your expertise, participation, and sometimes financial assistance to the Proud Boys prosecution. And I want to welcome you, and I want to have you share with the audience the behind-the-scenes goings-on as to what's happening in that trial, because I understand that the judge actually halted that trial here, it was last week, over this evidence that came out from this whistleblower. So you want to expound on that a bit, Trinus?
Yeah, so there's a lot of misconceptions going on there, some favorable and some unfavorable. So I guess when you're talking about what halted the trial, so the FBI agent Miller had introduced, Nicole Miller, by the way, introduced her part of the evidence as normal process. And people are, you know, there's a lot of misinformation. So let's go with the clarity here. So when she introduced the information regarding her part of the communications as to the investigation that she would be testifying to. Now, there's a lot of material facts there and exhibits and so forth that she would also testify, but these were her internal communications. So from the internal communications, what was flushed out was a simple 26 lines that she said, these were my communications regarding this internally with the investigative team from the FBI. All fine and dandy, normal course of action. Except the file size was unusually large, one of the paralegals noticed. And in noting that, began toggling on this thing and looking. It was an Excel spreadsheet, and she toggled to the unfiltered section. Well, lo and behold, in the unfiltered section came all of this other information, communications with that would total 13,955 lines. So in the 13,955 lines, a lot of it's syntax, et cetera. So it flushed out to be about 6,000 lines of actual data that was useful or informational. And then we had in that 80 lines that the government was absolutely demanding after everybody had read all of this And from the defense counsel was saying, oh, no, no, we can't have that. This is classified information. They recognizing their mistake. Now, interestingly enough, a lot of people that were in their courtroom from the government and include DOJ or assisting United States attorneys or their supervisors or FBI agents, as this information came out, there was conversation about that this information been scrubbed, yes, and she had done her proper part, which means she removes other people's communications. Then there was a process asking if she had sent the information in to sweep it, which is they sweep it for classified or et cetera, and she said no. A bunch of people literally jumped out of the gallery and left the room, the courtroom. There was quite a stir, even in mainstream legacy media reports on this. So in that, so can you imagine there was a mad dash, and one of the attorneys made the joke to me later. I said, what do you think they were doing? He said, I think they were packing for Peru. And it was pretty funny. We've had some good laughs on this. Now, beyond this, Mike, this is really, really good, Michael. The question line got into some things that really asked some delving questions, and the judge was very limiting. There was a lot of objection from the prosecution, from the government, about whatever, anything. And they essentially halted proceedings to address this, and simply an evidentiary hearings matter, so addressing specifically these documents. What they came to recognize from said documents is that there was all of this additional communication. Once the government opened this on their side, like, oh my gosh, she didn't do this, because they were looking at 26 lines. They're realizing that defense counsel has literally thousands of communications internally. Many of these communications, let me start with the baseline, are immoral, unethical, wrong, in a very simple term. Legally, they amount to some allegations that would fit prosecutorial misconduct, violation of the rules of professional conduct, constitutional deprivation of rights under the 4th, 6th, 12th, 14th Amendment scenarios, potentially in some of these areas. Certainly the biggest one being 6th Amendment. So now moving on in this, there's been quite a stir. So what people think is that, you know, Judge Kelly made this statement that providing that the government's motion is correct, there would be much ado about nothing. Well, yeah, if the government's motion is correct and there's nothing there. So let me explain a little bit more, if I may, about what is, unless you need to enter something here, but if not, I'll keep going.
No, you got the floor. I just want to let you know that we got a break coming up in a couple of minutes, but go ahead and continue. This is interesting. Go ahead.
All right. So the links system is what the FBI uses for internal chat communications, email, text, et cetera. It's like Microsoft Teams. As a matter of fact, it's Microsoft's earlier version of Teams, which many of us are familiar with. We used it in business settings, et cetera. Well, there's another indicator there. This is not some super secret FBI classified system. Okay, this is simply a communication system owned and used by Microsoft. So, and the FBI uses this like many other companies. So now what we have here is we're viewing internal communications. That's not all classified, and let me explain the why. So under the rules of evidence and there's one set of rules, and under the rules of classified documents in the intelligence community and how the United States United States of America governs these documents, there are two types of classified documents and many different classifications. And so let's start with classifications. LEO for law enforcement use only, right? Or FOUO for internal use only. There are so many different classifications. And it looks like you're up for a first break, Mike.
No, that's all right. We're gonna skip it. Just go ahead and continue. Yeah, Julie, skip that break. Go ahead.
I didn't know if that was a note to me or what. Okay, here we go. So, all right. So now, when you start talking about, we're not experts in the intelligence community. None of us came from that world. So, not having known these things, we had to do a lot of digging. I mean, there's literally, I think, 70 acronyms Some of them made a lot of sense. We already understood from the legal world, CHS, confidential human source, CI, counterintelligence. But there was a lot more we had to flush out. So, and many of these are just very benign terms representing maybe somebody that does forensics evidence on phones or data machines, you know, like computers, laptops, iPads, what have you. So that's all very normal. So, but we had to learn a lot of this. But what we learned along the way, we also learned about how documents are classified. So all documents within the FBI, if they're not classified, they simply may be sensitive. So at the top of the link system, it says you are entering a secure communications portal, et cetera, with a bunch of legal language. And then it says these documents or information contained within may be sensitive or classified. So it actually says sensitive / classified. Well, a lot of people got caught up in sensitive and classified. No, it's sensitive or, because a document can't be both. You have classification levels, and that's all done. So let me picture this. You're an FBI agent. It doesn't matter if it's your first day and you're dealing in your classified documents, or if you're a senior official outside of like Christopher Wray or the deputy director, et cetera, assistant director. Then everybody else, like lower ranks, the people that are not specifically granted what's called classification authority by either the president, a cabinet member, or their position, all have to work with the rules of classification or what's called a classification guide. And that's everybody in the FBI, Special Agent Joe to Special Agent Bob to Special Agent Sue. Now, so if the document's classified, there is a specific date that it's classified, and there is a specific person who classified it. And there is a classification guide, as I mentioned. And what's happened here is the government's come back and said, well, these documents are classified. Well, there's an argument to that, that you're a liar. That's the argument. You're bold-faced lying to the public and bold-faced lying to the judge, and you're bold-faced lying to the court. And, you know, of course, this is permissible seemingly in this day and age in the federal court in District 1. These documents are sensitive unless otherwise labeled, and that's the facts. There is no discussion about this, and I've talked to people in the intelligence community that had careers spanning 40 years to whistleblowers from some of the more famous events in the last two decades in our history that have confirmed this, as well as to be some other folks that would certainly know what they're talking about. And nobody's been in dispute of this. As a matter of fact, through this conversation, you'll see that Kyle Serafin just recently tweeted today about this, some of this, if any of you look her on social media. Kyle Serafin's the guy, remember, who called out Merrick Garland and about the whole school board scenario. And then we have Steve Friend, the whistleblower from the FBI, about the January 6th investigations. So in communication with some of the more prominent whistleblowers throughout history, I'm pretty sure we have a good handle on what we're doing and are gaining good guidance here. So with the good guidance we have, one of the things that's interesting to point out is when the government was making these allegations or statements, and that were absolutely abhorrent inside these in communications, saying that they were white supremacists, misogynists, et cetera, something or another, derogatory or defamatory terms, that really wasn't necessary. And no, it's not illegal, but it's embarrassing to the agency. Well, interestingly enough, under Rule Criminal Code 2817, Section 22, Subsection D, Delta, it explicitly prevents the federal government from removing documents or any other entity of classified nature or any other that contain criminal activity or that would be embarrassing to the agent entity or organization, et cetera, et cetera. So I can go on about that. So you tell me a good reason for removing what are essentially defamatory terms or slang that were used by FBI agents. So this is clear cut already on the very nose of this, that the FBI and the DOJ were willing to communicate, coordinate, to remove or classify, redacting 80 lines. And some of them are not benign like this, Michael. Some of these documents or statements held and contained within are much more than benign. So let me paint you another picture. We all understand the First Amendment free speech, except for the federal government seems to be having a lot of trouble with it these days. It's not permissible on social media, et cetera, et cetera. But there's also what's called protected speech, right? And there is information that when a client and counsel have communication, right? That speech is not to be listened to. That speech is supposed to be protected by attorney-client privilege. Now, the government has incorrectly argued in one in a previous court case and several pieces of case law that knowing that a third party is entertaining the or reviewing the information, like the Bureau of Prisons, makes this information no longer protected and that are privileged information. Well, that would all be fine and dandy, but if you go back and read what Congress did and what was done in the laws and why they created these laws, the only reason that the Bureau of Prisons has access to this is for the safety of the facility and those who work there. So it's an incorrect ruling. We've seen many incorrect rulings throughout history that have been overturned, and that has nothing to do with the Proud Boys case. This is actually quite a bit older case law. Argument to make this known and come back and refresh that argument. But aside from that, nowhere in there does it – that's why we also have ethics. So we're assuming that people are going to operate with ethics. So if the Bureau of Prisons reviews documents or information like that are going transferring between the attorney and the client or the counsel and client, what gives them the audacity to turn this over to the FBI? Well, are you hunting for something? Okay, fine. We'll even give you that. We'll go that far that you're looking for something. But the FBI, for what cause do they have to turn this over to the DOJ so that it can concoct and use this as weight in a case? Well, even that, so you say, well, that's legal. Well, let me couple it up for you and tell you where the problem really starts with this. So if you're reviewing this individual and you're saying, wow, have they foreclosed on his home yet? Do you think that at this point there's been a problem? I just listened to him, his wife screaming at him for an hour. Some of this kind of communication, and you couple all that up and say, it's a good time to go in and interview him again. I'd like to be in front of him tomorrow. Basically, you recognize that someone is weak.
So, yeah, right. Basically, what they're doing is they're listening to this to kind of ascertain or discern his emotional status to figure out when he's at his weakest point to be able to, I don't know, glean or to make a deal or –
right.
Right. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Yes. So now that's not the most disturbing part. So let's go back to classified documents again. So I'm just kind of giving you a picture of what we flushed out. This is your government today. This is how, I mean, we just, you know, that's just downright dirty and underhanded. And that's really inconsistent. You know, the goal of a prosecutor under the rules of professional conduct is to bring truth to the court. The goal of the prosecutor is to bring truth to the court, not the goal of the prosecutor to get a conviction, to go so stooped to such underhanded measures. However, this is the weaponized government that does no longer cares about the moral ground or et cetera. This is all about doing something that they want to do.
Right.
So, and let me get into this. So we've offered in case Roger Roots filed a motion for a special master. We heard this recently in Trump. We've heard this in Biden with classified documents, special master. So we offered to get this before a special master and let this individual that has security clearance to see these kind of documents, that is a lawyer, to review them. There are people that specifically do this for this type of purpose. Well, so far the government's balked and just demanded that documents are classified. Well, we contend that they're not all classified. So there's so much more to come here, what's going to happen. But I ask, you know, we've been talking a lot. One of the things that we mentioned in that motion was COINTELPRO, COINTELPRO. That was from 1956, 1971, Black Panther stuff, KKK, where the FBI was conducting the illegal activity and essentially luring and baiting people into kind of crimes.
Hold on just a second, Trent. Yeah, the music's coming up. We've got to go to about an hour break. We'll continue with this information on COINTELPRO. When we get back, my special guest, Trentus Evans. Thank you for tuning in, folks. See you in three. Much more to come. This is your government at work today, folks, under the Biden administration. Be right back.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Back with the National Intel Report. Michael Herzog, your Tuesday host, with my special guest, Trentus Evans, who is involved, heavily involved, in this whole trial surrounding the Proud Boys, which is just one of many, many, many extensions of this, joke of prosecutions going on with Patriots on January 6th. But anyway, getting back to what you're talking about with COINTELPRO, Trentus, go ahead, continue.
Interesting stuff there. So, if you remember the COINTELPRO stuff, and I didn't, it was a little before my time. I was born in 74. I'm not saying that you remember, Michael, no offense, everybody, but for those who've done historical research on this, I know it's ancient history to you, Michael.
But you have to remember, I wasn't an awakened American then. I was just a dumbed down normie. However, I was around, so go ahead.
Were you still smoking pot in a college dorm room?
I was at Haight-Ashbury trying to meet George Harrison on the corner of Haight and what is it? I don't know. Anyway, go ahead.
Where was I? I can't remember.
Yeah. You were a spark in your father's eye at the time. Go ahead.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Anyway, so here we go. The COINTELPRO stuff's really interesting. So that's one of the cases we went back to and looked into, outrageous government conduct, et cetera. There's good cases since then that really have, like I said, lent themselves to our efforts here. But I'm going to get too far because we have some new strategies that we're going to be unveiling here this week. So keep your eyes peeled for that. There's a whole lot more to come on this outrageous government conduct. Like I said, I wish I could get into all the details. But well,
can I interject here just for a moment? Because yes, you're exploring a lot of different areas here. But it seems to me, during the course of my relatively limited exploration today, folks, because I've been really busy with other stuff. But I ran across an article that said something about the judge had delayed this trial until, what was it, December? Is that true or not?
Incorrect. I don't know what.
Okay.
The trial's ongoing. I mean, they were back in trial today. What's happened is there's been he's limited the cross-examination to only statements that Nicole Miller made that were in the original 26 documents, while this other information is going to be up for an evidentiary hearing. Could be this week, should be this week. So he hasn't, when I last tuned out with the attorneys after lunch, I don't know what's transpired in the last few hours. I've been on another issue. So when we have some cases, let me kind of help the public here, if you will, your listeners. So anyway, this equates to what the government references as a spillage, right? When there's classified or sensitive information has been released and it wasn't released properly or didn't have the proper protocols for handling. So when we think of other things, we think of a spillage would be the Exxon Valdez would be a different type of spillage. So there's a cleanup for this process that's been underway for a little bit. And now this is where this 80 lines redacted. But again, I turn your attention back to the very fact that the government has already one of the statements scrubbed from the document that should not have been removed. That statement that is now not there would nowhere in any law book or any classification rule does that statement meet the test to remove that from view of the public. So interesting, another piece that I find very interesting
is, let me stop you and say, do we know exactly what that statement is?
Yes, that statement is the one I referenced where there's a defamatory statement language being used.
Okay.
About the problem. There's no reason for that removal of that information. So
okay, go ahead.
This is like I said, does not meet the test. So I'm gonna play this. I'm gonna throw this card out there, and I'm gonna tell you what. When I'm throwing this card, I'm throwing a low one. It's not my ace, and it's not our jack. It's not even a 10.
But I'll give three of spades.
Yeah, that's right. We're throwing a three of spades here, government. I'm gonna give you this one. Get ready to argue on a whole new basis and premise for this. Your whole idea of systems and accountability, measures and methods, all of this is getting ready to crumble. And if we have anything that resembles a constitution or anything that resembles a judicial process with any real meaning. So Judge Kelly has taken this, firm stance that the government is motion. Why would you say if the government's motion is correct that there's much to do and not nothing? Why wouldn't you say if the defense motion are correct, there's a whole hell of a lot of to do about something? Why would, or that the fact that there would be an immediate dismissal? Well, why not? So this is obviously telling. I mean, essentially, these judges in D.C. are such creatures of the swamp that they essentially sit at the table, if you will. They might as well just be on the prosecution team. So he's limited this under a 403, saying it's not relevant or doesn't fit the scope. So that's just not really the case. But Judge Kelly, like many of these judges, is nothing more than, and I hate to say this, but it's really true, picture Don Lemon and Chuck Schumer's love child. That's the equivalent of Judge Kelly. So that is really where – that's the sad sickness that exists in our courts today. But let's get more into the facts here, more facts for your listeners. The Proud Boys case. So you've heard of Five Eyes, right, Michael?
Yes.
Okay, so for your listeners, Five Eyes is the five English-speaking countries, right? That's where this is derivative from. So you have Canada, New Zealand, Australia, UK, and the United States. And Five Eyes is an intelligence pact between – or treaty, I should say more so – between the five English-speaking countries. Now, why would that matter here? They have all the investigative tools they need. They have the NSA, the FBI, et cetera, et cetera. And the laws have changed so dramatically and shifted in favor of the government after 9/11 and the Patriot Act that things have really become very different in what's allowed and not allowed, and the rules of evidence and the rules for these people for what they can do to collect information, financial documents, and so much more. So these intelligence communities are three-letter agencies. Absolutely, it's been a power grab, and they've taken full advantage since Lois Lerner. Now, Lois Lerner, the reason that's important is under that's where Five Eyes, the community there, really took a big shift. Lois Lerner under Barack Obama sold our communications networks to another company, who in turn sold it to another company, and then finally ended up in the hands of Ericsson. Ericsson is one of these Rothschild-type families that's been around, you know, since the dawn of ages kind of scenario from history. And
you're talking about when Lois Lerner was in charge of the IRS, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. All right, so go ahead.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, not Lois Lerner, Loretta Lynch.
Loretta Lynch. Oh, okay, that's different. Yeah, all right.
Yeah,
that's different. Right. General under Obama. Yeah, go ahead.
There you go. Yeah, and she made it okay. So they made this sale of our communications data stuff okay under Obama. This was really disgusting that what happened here. And this is how we got way outside the line of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. And you got to remember, we were hurting as a country after 9/11. And people were okay with this stuff. Bush was the first step. We had abandoned our Christian principles and our constitutional ethical guideline for our country and said, hey, who gives a shit if they, who gives a darn if they waterboard a terrorist in Gitmo as long as no more Americans die? But the Constitution has to ring true and be what we're about, right? So, and that's a mistake that was made. So let's go back into this. So now, where we end up with this and why is it important? So two of the countries, New Zealand and Canada, have already classified the Proud Boys as a terrorist group. Now, it didn't fit and they couldn't get it done here. They attempted it, but it has not been done. But what would this give us is it would give credence to the international community to monitor communications. So how does this work? When the FBI wants to monitor something that they can't monitor, when the intelligence community here, it's just way outside the line and turn out to be another COINTELPRO and they'd get in trouble and they'd have to house the documents and somebody might find out. Well, these people work together. So somebody over somewhere else in another country says, hey, you know, I'm working for the U.S. government. We got this problem. Picture this scenario, the Proud Boys. And now all of a sudden, the communications, the wiretapping, the banking, every single thing about this is now open for business. There's no closed sign, no do not trespass. This is too far. It's way beyond the Constitution. They can simply have Americans surveilled in a way that would absolutely be out of scope, out of bounds, illegal, unconstitutional, and utilize that information and the collection of that data thanks to those other countries' intelligence network.
And that was what was used. Correct me if I'm wrong, and this is, I'm, you know, scraping the cobwebs out of my brain here, but that the Five Eyes was used in this whole trumped-up scheme impeachment on Trump for the Russian collusion with the Christopher Steele dossier and the UK spying. That entered into it at some point in time back then, I believe. Yeah, go ahead.
100% on point. Great point. So we knew this was wrong, but why was there no accountability? Why did nobody ever really get in any real trouble? Other than the fact that our duplicitous courts and what they operate as. But because the real information, you get to a place essentially where the sidewalk ends and falls off in the abyss and you can't go beyond there. They house the information from Five Eyes, of course, in Sweden. We have no jurisdiction there. We have no reason to get this. It's outside of judicial oversight or judiciary oversight. It's outside of the reach of even Congress to collect anything from there. So it's a global intelligence community now with these five countries that have the whole of the data and whatever they want to use, there's no boundaries. This is what's wrong, folks. This is why our country, we're experiencing this slippage. You know, it's kind of like when the transmission's going out. We're going, we're not getting down the road very well constitutionally because the transmission's out, and that's the Constitution holding us together.
So let me interject here. So Canada and New Zealand have declared the Proud Boys as a terrorist organization, which puts them under a completely different set of circumstances, just like the Patriot Act was introduced in 2001, shortly thereafter, 2001, where they could prosecute Susan Lindell and Jose Padilla under the Patriot Act, not give them access to a lawyer, just a whole litany of other stuff that doesn't apply to a normal human being in a normal circumstance. Am I right there?
You're 100% on target. I mean, you know, it's great that you have this information. You can, you know, add to these things. So people are just lost on this, and it doesn't register how destructive this is, how unconstitutional. We are way beyond a land of worry here. They no longer, if anything they want to do, they just utilize the other agencies. And there, you don't have any rights anymore. You truly do live in this surveillance state. And who's to say? So you no longer have to worry about keeping tabs on simply Americans that might be wanting to sell secrets, give information, surveil, do things improperly. You now have to worry about the agents of five countries because they have this access that's unfettered to your life, to the lives of Americans. And that, my friends, is very disgusting. And if it's not disturbing to you, it's time to really wake up. I'm not the expert on Five Eyes. I'm very recently read into this and waking up on this. Laura Logan has done a lot to give me my initial education, and she knows this information so well. But and she's been a great friend to me in helping, and I love to give efficacy where it's due. And I tell you what, the credit is due to her to help me. She's the one that when I was explaining my problem and kind of going over some of the stuff we were dealing in with notes and warned her on this argument because she's such a global force and has so much history and knowledge that she said, Trennis, you're going to meet with Five Eyes here. You're going to get to this end of the place where there's not going to be anything. So I've started describing it so that people can put it in their head as the sidewalk that falls off in the abyss where you can't see anymore. And that's the problem. So I believe that if we were able to pull on this string, and that's why Judge Kelly and the government are going to fight us tooth and nail, if we were to pull on this string long enough and hard enough and be resilient enough to stand through this test in these cases right now, that it's another crack at taking a look at what Five Eyes does and realizing it's being used against American citizens. But let's talk about the things that are happening here at home. Many people have heard in the Proud Boys trial, there's been a lot of commotion about the 1776 document, which is essentially derivative of the document storming the Winter Palace that has to do with Russia, et cetera. And I believe that's 1930s, if I'm correct, 20s or 30s. But anyway, so it was a revisited version that was written by somebody. Now, the interesting part is that when they secured a plea deal from this Jeremy Bertino, they laid claim to the fact to Mr. Bertino that Enrique Tarrio had edited or written this document or made it palatable to fit the narrative for January 6th. But it's already come out in the trial that this young woman, Erica Davis, I believe her name was. I'm sorry, we just have so many names rolling around here. That this young lady was approached by an FBI agent, informant, or somebody that may have been a confidential human source, and asked to send this to Tarrio, which it appears from the evidence that he never even opened the thing and wasn't even aware of it, hadn't paid attention much to what she was sending. Well, interesting that we move to the next part of this. So Mr. Bertino, who has now, can you pay? I don't know, we were actually, some of the attorneys today were talking about this. We can imagine how this went. You know, Mr. Bertino, do you want to spend your life in prison and as an insurrectionist, as of this, you know, and be superseding indictments if you don't take this plea? We've got more on you. And if you don't, roll over and become a witness for us, you know, how would you protect a guy that actually did this and set you up? He wrote this document. So this is all fleshing out in court right now. Agent Miller is saying, well, I don't know who wrote it. I don't know that he didn't write it. They know damn good and well where this came from, I'm sure. Now, Agent Miller may very well not know, but the federal government and the DOJ and the FBI definitely know because they set this thing up, and that's been already fleshed out in the evidence.
Okay, so it sounds to me like this document that Erica Davis forwarded over, and you're talking about Bertino and they're approaching him and scaring him to death with the plea deal and so forth. This fits part and parcel, Trinis, to what I understand that they did to Jacob Chansley, the shaman. I mean, they basically, you know, like a cat to a mouse, playing with him and emotionally destroying him to a point where he took a plea deal before and the evidence that they had to the contrary was not even submitted to Jacob Chansley's defense. This is the same thing that's going on with Bertino and them trying to offer him a plea deal. I mean, this is just, I mean, if you could only imagine, and maybe you've been there, I have, I know, it's an emotional game that is played with these people. If you're in a prison cell 23 hours a day, for years, you're deprived of a haircut. They want to make you look as disheveled as you can in a court of law anytime you make an appearance. They want to make you look like a criminal. They want to emotionally, physically, and spiritually wear you down to where you'll do anything to get out of the nightmarish circumstances of which you happen to be residing. Is that correct?
Well, pretrial detainees actually are treated worse, especially the January 6th defendants, than prisoners. Prisoners have rights, you know, and pretrial detainees are supposed to, but we've seen clearly they didn't. They weren't allowed religious services. They weren't allowed in-person visitation. They kept these things from them so that they would wear down. Then 2 years, and then many of these people spent three quarters of that in solitary confinement. Nuremberg trials said that 30 days of or 60 days of solitary confinement was too long. And then later in the Geneva Convention, it was determined that 30 days was too long. But the federal government here, the DOJ, is what they do to sidestep that is they let them out for an hour a day and say, oops, started all over. Timeline starts all over, getting out 1 hour a day. Doesn't mean they get to interact with others. They're just out of their cell. So it's no longer considered solitary confinement because they're in a group space. Uh-huh. There didn't have to be anyone from the group there. Group space meets the test, according to the federal government. But this government is the only government that still uses tear gas on its people, which was outlawed again. That another item, a weapon of war that was outlawed in the Geneva Convention. So, you know, there's this ongoing atrocities by the federal government. We're actually one of only a handful of countries in the entire world that uses tear gas on its people. One of the reasons is tear gas is known to enrage people and mobs or groups or what have you. Because if there's a chemical reaction in the brain when you're breathing it in, it's kind of like having a methamphetamine hit you and it creates an enraging factor. It's never proven anywhere to work, but we continue to use it. But that's another story. But I'm sorry, you have to guide me back to your original question. I derailed because I'm just so sick.
No, I'm just talking about the psychological torment that is ongoing with these people, and it's deliberate. And I have posed the question, I've pondered the question many times, as to how it is, you know, whatever happened to due process, right to a speedy trial, how did they get around this with all of these people unless they invoked the Patriot Act? And that's been a question of mine all through this. Do you have an answer to that?
Yeah, well, I've heard an indicator that the Patriot Act was mentioned in a trial under seal. I don't have any knowledge that we weren't involved in that case. So, you know, Condemned USA has done an amazing amount of work I don't know how many cases now, 50-some-odd cases we've been engaged in one way, shape, or form. And then we've maybe helped a lot more people find attorneys or, you know, let them talk to someone, get a second opinion on counsel. So mm-hmm. It's disturbing that this could be, because I don't know what the fitting test is for the Patriot Act to be used on these people, other than the fact that it would go along with the ideology of this whole shock and awe.
But let me interject here and say that if you're using Five Eyes and Canada and New Zealand have declared these guys terrorists, there you are, because if it's a terrorist. If you're a terrorist, it's a whole set of conditions that apply, i.e. Jose Padilla, Susan Lindauer, which is another story I don't even have time to go into today. But to me, that would be a piece of the puzzle that might fit. I don't know. You know. But again, I spent a lot of time, Trinis, pondering on exactly how it is that they I'm sure that these individuals, and I speak for all of them, they didn't, you know, just consciously waive their right to a speedy trial, which if I remember correctly,
is, was it fall in 6 months or something like that, I believe, that you have to go to trial unless you waive that. Now, I'm going back years to when I was in the system.
And you're correct. You're correct on that. So what the problem is that they've, you know, essentially ruled from the bench a new set of laws for this, and it's a little disturbing. Essentially, if your attorney files a motion, every time you file a motion, starts all over. So that's part of the scenario. It's like, we're going to have to stop the clock here for until this motion is answered because there's something new in play, right? I'm sorry.
Let me ask you a couple things. First of all, and forgive me for being naive about this, but because I haven't been following all this of late, but how many members of the Proud Boys are on trial at this moment?
Five.
Okay, right. And they were affiliated, correct me if I'm wrong, because I recall watching a few videos several months back. I believe it was a conversation between the Proud Boys and Stuart Rhodes. Am I wrong in that, if I recall correctly? And
I could talk about the parking garage. So you're talking about Enrique Tarrio, Stuart Rhodes, Bianca Gracia in the parking garage?
I believe so. And in that video, I could find nothing that those people said that would incriminate them in any fashion. If I recall,
Josh Macias was the other guy there.
Yeah, if I recall, it was just the exact opposite. They wanted to make sure that they didn't incite anything and that they were very peaceful. That was my recollection. And yet, on the as we see this unfolding, the establishment is turning this around and make it look like these are the worst guys on the planet, like they did with Stuart Rhodes, like they did with Jacob Chansley, like they did with so many others. And, you know, my own discernment from this, Trentis, is using the incarceration, using the isolation as a tool to wear them down emotionally and spiritually to a point where they'll do anything to get out of this. Anything, throw their hands up in the air and say, okay, I'm guilty, just get me out of this situation. At least they have a light at the end of the tunnel with Jacob Chansley, 41 months in prison. I don't know, what did Stuart Rhodes get, 20 years? Is that right? I don't recall.
Well, give you the trifecta here. So let me triangulate this disaster of the swampy DC
courts. Okay.
So you're talking about, by the way, to answer, that's Joe Biggs, Ethan Nordine, Zachary Rill, Enrique Tarrio, and Dominic Pizzola on trial in the Proud Boys case.
Okay.
And Stuart Rhodes. So now go back to that. So I left one out. It was Josh, and the people in the garage of the conversation you watched was Bianca Gracia, Enrique Tarrio, Stuart Rhodes, and Josh Macias. Josh Macias was Veterans for America First, which was at the time Veterans for Trump. Then you had the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys. Bianca Gracia was Latinos for Trump. So, and that, there was nothing wrong with this meeting. They were literally discussing who was going to speak at what, and et cetera. So, you saw the conversation for yourself. It was a benign conversation. The reason they were meeting where they were meeting is to be out of the public eye and not be approached by, they can't go to a restaurant and have a moment's peace because they're all leaders of these fabled conservative groups. So I know Macias very well. We worked on Stewart's case, called me in August. We began working on that case. Tario's in this case. I speak to him somewhat frequently in his mother.
Okay, let me stop you, Trentis. We've got a top hour break, then we'll be back. Michael Herzog, National Intel Report, with my special guest, Trentis Evans, talking about the Proud Boys trial and this whole debacle, this whole atrocity that we call January 6th. Second hour coming up. Stick around, folks. More to come.
We must take America back. We need prayer in the schools and more things made in USA. We must take America back. We must take America back.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To read more about this amazing breakthrough and to order your terahertz frequency wand, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.